From the KGOU studios, I'm Suzette Gorlot, the Dean of the University of Oklahoma's College of International Studies, and welcome to Worldviews. Rebecca Cruz and I discuss the new mayor of London and Germany's announcement it will rescind decades-old convictions for homosexuality.
The majority of these men were persecuted from 49 to 69, and so timing becomes an issue here, and they want to make sure that they can do this so that most of them can receive this compensation.
Then I'll talk with anthropologist Laura Graham. During her doctoral research, she recognized the power of how South American indigenous populations were represented.
Chavante have been very prominent in the Brazilian media and have had very little control over that image circulation.
I'll also talk with her filmmaking partner, David Hernandez Palmar, right after this hour's news. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Gorlot. Rebecca Cruz, interesting news out of London this week. Sadiq Khan, the new mayor of London, took office, was recently elected, and he's the first mayor of London that is a Muslim. He's of Pakistani background and heritage. Of course, he's been in London his whole life. His parents immigrated there. His mother was a seamstress, his father a bus driver. I mean, he's a member of the Labour Party, so it's a big change for London. No longer do they have the Conservative Party in power in London. You know, and he's made some interesting comments already about the United States and about our presidential election, about Donald Trump and his ignorance about Islam. So he's already making a splash. But is this really kind of a reflection of how changed London is? I mean, anybody who goes to London now sees that it's a very different city, city of immigrants. It's really an interesting dynamic going on in London.
Absolutely. Let's consider this. The last two decades or so, the population of the UK in general, but particularly in London, has essentially doubled of foreign-born residents. And some of this comes from their colonial past, obviously, but really also from their role in the EU and the ability of a foreign national to then come. We think about London, about 12%, 12.5% of London residents are actually Muslim. So he's representing that population as well. And those numbers have increased significantly over the last two decades as well. So yes, a very changed London. And we can continue this theme or this trend to continue into the future as white Londoners and even white Englanders are essentially staying the same in terms of birth rates. But these other populations, minority populations, are continuing to grow. So this will change.
Of course, he says, you know, he represents everyone. And in fact, he says that extremists, Islamic extremists, don't like him because, of course, he represents Western values and opportunity. And what he says about opportunity is really interesting because London is such an expensive city now. All of this money, all this foreign money that's you know, been brought into London over the past many years, that you just, you know, a seamstress and a bus driver can't even make a living in London anymore. And he's concerned about this as the head of the Labour Party. And so, you know, it's a reflection, I think, of all kinds of things, not just race and religion, but socioeconomics as well.
Absolutely. And he said that's going to be a platform of his term. And he's going to commemorate the Holocaust here in the next couple of weeks, a memorial to commemorate the Holocaust, and has called out members of his own party that he felt have been anti-Semitic. So he is looking to attack discrimination, be it religious, ethnic, or as you said, socioeconomic.
Well, it'll be very interesting to watch what happens in London. Let's stay in Europe and let's talk about Germany. Germany is in the news this week for rescinding convictions for homosexuality from actually after the Second World War, from 1949 to 1969. The law that homosexuals have apparently broken was actually rescinded in 1994. But these convictions, the 50,000 convictions during that period of time, hadn't been. And so this is a very interesting step that the Germans are taking to demonstrate kind of correcting longstanding injustice and demonstrating their acceptance of sexual orientation.
Yeah, and the majority of these men were persecuted from 49 to 69. And so timing becomes an issue here. They're wanting to get this law into place so that these men can be legally rehabilitated and perhaps be eligible for some sort of financial compensation. But obviously they're aging and they want to make sure that they can do this so that most of them can receive this compensation.
Well, again, in Europe, where you see kind of some of these liberal Western value-based laws, it took them a long time to do this. And it's Germany, where you actually have a significant amount of tolerance of these sorts of things.
Yeah, they've actually recognized civil unions since 2001 in Germany. There have been memorials to how the Nazis treated homosexuality. So this does seem kind of late to the game, but there's also been pushes here recently to get them to legalize gay marriage. They haven't done that so far. So we might be seeing more of a trend, but hopefully this law will get passed soon or will be removed soon, and these men can get the justice that they've deserved.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Rebecca, for being here as always.
Thank you.
If you have any questions or comments about this discussion, let us know online at kgou.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at WorldviewsKGOU, or you can get in touch with me at Suzek Rolat. You can find all of our past conversations in the Worldview section of our website. Next, I'm joined by filmmakers Laura Graham and David Hernandez-Palmar, who worked with Indigenous Media in South America. I'm Suzek Rolat, and this is Worldviews. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzek Rolat. Today I'm joined by Laura Graham. She's an anthropologist at the University of Iowa whose research focuses on how indigenous populations in South America are represented to the broader public. Her work with the Xavante oral culture has been featured on the public radio segment Pulse of the Planet, which KGOU airs weekday mornings. I'll also talk with David Hernandez-Palmar. He's an indigenous filmmaker who's produced documentaries about land, water, and women's issues in his native Venezuela. Laura Graham and David Hernandez-Palmar, welcome to Worldviews.
Thank you. It's very nice to be here.
Well, you both are doing such interesting work in indigenous areas of the world, focusing on indigenous populations, but in particular on indigenous media. And so, first of all, tell us a little bit about your background, Laura, and kind of how you got into this as an anthropologist, how you got into this, and how you got to working in Venezuela with David.
Well, my work with indigenous peoples began in Brazil with a group called the Xavante, who live in central Brazil. And I did my master's and doctoral research there. And I had an experience during that field work where I really came to recognize the power of other peoples controlling mediated representations of indigenous peoples, and the fact that indigenous peoples, the Xavante in this case, didn't have control over how their image and ideas about them were circulating in the media, circulating in the broader public. Xavante have been very prominent in the Brazilian media and have had very little control over that image circulation. And one experience I had was with a Catholic priest came to the community. And he brought a film of Xavante that had been filmed in another area, another reserve. And they were so excited to see this film. But he said, you can watch this film after you watch a film of Jesus Christ and the Resurrection. So it was this kind of bribe. And that made a big impression on me. And about that time, I was beginning to learn, this was in the early 1990s, of indigenous media projects elsewhere in Brazil, but also this was a time that media projects were launching, especially as cameras were becoming more easy to use, not quite so expensive. And so together with a group called Video in the Villages, a nonprofit in Brazil, I brought a video camera and all of the playback equipment, including a generator. There was no electricity in this community, and began to teach them how to use the camera so they would be able to make their own images and use them in whatever way they wanted. So a few years later, I had a Fulbright fellowship in Venezuela, and I met David, who is a photographer, and long story short, I was invited to come back to Brazil to to document some activities that were going on in related to an environmental protest, environmental movement. And I wanted David to meet the Chavante filmmaker that I had been working with and invited him to come along with him. And he was very happy to do that. And so that began a partnership of our working together on a number of different projects. The most concrete of our collaborations is a film called Owners of the Water, Conflict and Collaboration Over Rivers. And that's the story of our trip to Brazil and David's encounter with the Chavante and the Chavante's struggle to protect their river. And Chavante have environmental problems and problems protecting their water, which in some ways is similar but also different from struggles that Wayuu people have in Venezuela and Colombia.
So, David, can I pick up on something that Laura just said about her concerns regarding the power of controlling indigenous voices and that indigenous populations weren't able to be – they weren't in charge of their own portrayal. Is this your experience in Venezuela and why you would connect with somebody like Laura in terms of engaging in these kinds of projects? I mean, tell us about your experience as a member of an indigenous population in Venezuela.
Actually, amongst Wayuu people, I mean my people, we don't have that issue about creating material for insiders, outsiders. But I saw that in Chavante communities, and I thought it was such a very, very interesting thing, especially because you have to, I mean, to think about narrative and self-representation, but also, you know, who controls the narrative. Well, in the case of Venezuela and Colombia, indigenous peoples that we live there, sometimes I think we have to think of those governments and how the media has been, you know, like imposed in our everyday life. And maybe so we didn't have that, you know, notion of having insiders and or outsiders, you know, videos for consumption. But now, regarding those issues of environment, mining, some other, you know, sensitive situations back there, for us, it is just recently that we began to think why it is so important to control the narrative. I mean, like thinking of that in a conscious way, because we've been doing so because we have no hidden agenda. We always, you know, make open calls for assemblies and Congress and gatherings, not only because by meaning of media, but also like what's going on, you know, regarding land tenure, water, and other elements that are part of the everyday life. But yeah, I mean, from that very exercise, I realized that there were other layers of all the, you know, indigenous media and why we call indigenous media and who are part of that. You know, what is the type of collaborative where we can do? It's the same, you know, level of dialogue and within those process. So it's a nonstop dialogue. Actually, I was just recently talking to Laura Graham about. What is the most important thing, the product or the whole dialogue that actually, you know, it's embedded within the process? So in the case of the Wayuu, most recently, we're doing our own, showcase, film showcase back there without borders. I mean, we are in both countries, Venezuela and Colombia, and there are two total different type of government. And what is the challenge we are facing? You know, taking account that they're the same thing in terms of extractivism, you know, coal mining, oil, and all these sort of things. And why we should just begin to think of what is the type of the information content in those products, but also wondering and asking, questioning. Are the elders taking part of this? It's not something that about romanticizing that they are just the keepers of the pureness of the information or the way it should be, But also is the thing about, you know, like taking away all those traces of ageism. Because it's up to everyone, you know, indigenous, non-indigenous, from the youngest to the oldest, to take care of planet, you know, of the earth. So, I mean, we're just having these, you know, conversations, you know, based on those.
I'm talking with David Hernandez-Palmar and Laura Graham, a filmmaking team who focus on South American indigenous populations. We'll hear more from them right after a short break. I'm Suzette Grelot, and this is Worldviews. You're listening to Worldviews. I'm Suzette Grelot, the Dean of the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma. My guests this half hour are anthropologist Laura Graham and filmmaker David Hernandez-Palmar. Just before the break, he described the differences in how South American indigenous populations are perceived in various forms of media. I'm curious, though, when you refer to indigenous media, and Laura, you refer to this as well, the creation of outlets for indigenous peoples to control the narrative, their own narrative, to control the way in which their story is portrayed. But is there any attempt to connect that to mainstream media? I mean, are you also working with mainstream media to incorporate indigenous media into what's being seen and heard and viewed by, you know, the masses, if you will, in mass media? You know, trying to re-educate and train, if you will, mass media, those who participate in mass media? I mean, what are your strategies there for not only providing the indigenous populations a voice, but to have that voice amplified beyond, you know, the indigenous community?
I put it in two ways. Like, in the very first thing is when you where are your aspirations with your narrative? Would you want to, you know, make, you know, like be competitive and be as strong as CNN, for instance? If it's that case, you know, like you have to think about all the money you have to invest, you know, how would you do that? But on the other hand, it's just, you know, oh, yeah, I mean, I think the best thing is just to have our own narrative and have other ways or alternative, you know, ways of storytelling about ourselves. You know, I think that's the main thing that we are aware of. Like, you know, it is so good just to have other venues, other, you know, strategies, other alternative things, so we can also choose, you know, within those dialogues and those contradictions, and also these, you know, mediating and this eradication through media or about media. And then people have, you know, more chances just to, you know, to choose which side of the storytelling, you know, would rather just to be focused on. On the other hand, we were in Bolivia 3 weeks ago, and there was this huge summit about TV, human rights of indigenous peoples, and technology. What are those challenges in Latin America back there? You know, why is some advances on constitutional writing are being distracted by new administrations there. All these advances regarding the rights of indigenous peoples to the our means of communication. So those are, you know, the main challenges. And yeah, of course, I mean, we are aspiring to have like a continental network of indigenous programming on TV. You know, and also we're learning about the shutting down of from analog to digital, you know, that transition. You know, which countries are, you know, are going through that in 2020, for instance, Venezuela, and what are those technology? So all these things that we're facing, even though we're still working with mini TV, and you know, we have like other situations with the technology we have access to. But at the same time, you know, why is it so important for us just to have a voice in the big conversation about creating platforms of media and self-representation back there in Venezuela, not only for indigenous peoples, but also women, and elders, ecologists, farmers, peasants there. So I think that that's why we're not like, you know, like fortifying the discourse of, you know, everything has to have a law, everything has to have a law with a proper project and then, you know, be executed. But we've seen that it's very important not just to be complaining about something, but also, you know, how do you connect with those people that had that have actually the power to pass law and make you know, how do you put flesh and bones to that? Because it is also such a challenge just to create a law. How do you put it in practice?
Well, Laura, maybe we can end with you on that note about the power of film and video to communicate a lot of these things. As a filmmaker, you know, is this the best way to perhaps, for lack of a better way of putting it, kind of infiltrate, you know, the general population to get these messages out and to, you know, emancipate indigenous populations in terms of how they're perceived in their own countries and their own territories?
Well, I think that audiovisual media is an extremely powerful medium, and it's something that captivates people. If you walk into a home and the TV is going, people gravitate toward the television. It's a magnetic media. But I would also say that community radio is also a very powerful medium through which indigenous peoples are controlling ideas, their narrative, as David puts it, trying to break down the hegemonic narratives of the dominant society. Part of the dialogue I think that David is referring to is this interview, for example, our opportunity to broadcast his ideas, our work to a broader audience through any kind of media, face-to-face encounters. We're going to be meeting Native peoples and filmmakers from the Americas here. So these are all part of dialogues, connections, and further mediations that are happening. So audiovisual medium is one medium, but we will be having face-to-face conversations, and the ripple effects are tremendous.
Well, Laura and David, thank you so much for being here today and engaging in this dialogue and furthering our knowledge and awareness about this issue. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to my conversation with anthropologist Laura Graham and filmmaker David Hernandez-Palmar. You can find more information and watch the trailer for their film, Owners of the Water, on our website, kgou.org. Worldviews is a collaborative partnership between KGOU and the University of Oklahoma's College of International Studies. Brian Hardzinski writes and posts our digital content to the web and social media. Our research producer is Miranda Wilson, and the show is put together by Sam Dupre. For Rebecca Cruz, I'm Suzette Gorlott.